We're holding on Nun Aleph Amr Aleph, fourth line. We were discussing the question of what is the power that the Kohen Gadol brings on Yom Kippur, which we're saying he brings on behalf of himself and the other Kohenim. Is that basically considered to be his own Karban, and the Kohen, the fact that the Kohenim have Kapara with it is sort of incidental, which the Gemara called Mikufya? Or is it that the other Kohenim are considered actual partners, actual co-owners of the animal, and their kapara with it is in a fixed way, the same way as any other case where you have partners who bring a korban together? One nafkamina we said is whether it's possible to make a tamura with it. If it's an individual's korban, then yes. If it's a partner's korban, then no. So in that connection, we brought a braisa that mentioned that there's a certain chumras in a zevach over a tmura, and certain ones in a tmura over a zevach. Now, zevach generically means a korban. So we were figuring that, it mentioned that there's a korban that applies to both the yochid and the tzibur, which is doicha Shabbos and tuma. So we were trying to figure out which one that was. On the face of it, it would have to be the Par Kohen Gadol, because most other korbanos are either korbanos of a yachid, and those are not Deicha Shabbos and not Deicha Tumah, or they're korbanos of the Tzibur, which are Deicha Shabbos and Tumah, but then a Tumura wouldn't apply to them. On the other hand, the power Kohen Gadol, on the face of it, meets those criteria. It's Deicha Shabbos and Tumah. On the other hand, if we assume that it's a Korban Yachid, then it's possible for it to make a Tumura. So Rav Sheshes had said that we'll be talking about another personal Korban of Aaron, namely the ram that he brings on Yom Kippur. That one is brought as an Ola, and there's nothing special with that. There's no Kapara in it for anybody else other than himself. So therefore, that one could be the one that the Braisa is talking about. And we went back and forth. Is that necessarily the case? Could we say that it's talking about? Some other kind of korban? Anyway, so now continuing on that discussion, Ula Rav Sheshes, we have to ask, according to Rav Sheshes, Ademoikin law be'eloi shel Aaron, instead of explaining that the Braisa is referring to eloi shel Aaron, Loikma be'pesach. Why doesn't he instead say that the Braisa is talking about the Korban Pesach? What would be better about that? Tosfos points out that the word Zevach does mean a Korban generically, but we find it more specifically in connection with the Korban Pesach. Ba'amartem Zevach Pesach hu la'Hashem. So why doesn't Rav Shesha say that the Braisa is talking about a Korban Pesach, which fits all of these criteria? It applies to the Yochid and the Tzibur. There's actually different yursos, in the previous thing. Is it noig b'yochid kiva tzibur or noig b'tzibur kiva yochid? Is it that it's noig with the yochid just as it is with the tzibur? In other words, it's primarily a korban tzibur, but it also applies to individuals. Or is it the other way around? It's primarily a korban of yechidim and it also applies to the tzibur. Anyway. The Korban Pesach is like that, because individuals can bring it, but it's brought by the whole Jewish people together, or as we're going to talk about now in the Gemara, on the face of it, it's possible to have a Korban Pesach that's brought for one person versus for a whole group of people. It is Deicha Shabbos and Tumah, and it is able to make a Tumura. So it fits all the criteria. The Deicha is a Shabbos versus a Tumah, but it's a Tumura, the Korban Yachadu. What forces Rav Sheshes to say that the zevach of that braisa refers to Eloi Shel Aaron, which is brought on Yom Kippur, when it would be just as easy for him to say that it refers to the Korban Pesach? The answer is kasava, because Rav Sheshes holds, according to the opinion, which is Rav Yehuda in the Mishnah in Pesachim, ein shechten haPesach al haYochid. We learned in Masech of Pesachim that Rav Yehuda had learned, based on certain psukim, that you're not allowed to shecht the Korban Pesach for an individual. You have to have at least two people registered for the Korban Pesach who are going to eat it. Now, practically speaking, the halacha is not like him. And practically speaking, you don't want to do it for a yachid because he's more likely to leave some of it over. He's not likely to be able to eat all of it before chatzos. But lahalacha, you are allowed to shecht it for a yachid if he has enough of an appetite that he'll eat the whole thing. But Rabbi Yehuda holds, based on gzeres hakasev, based on a drasha from psukim, that you're not allowed to. You always have to have at least two people. Well then, according to Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore Rav Sheshes were saying hold that way, then it comes out that a korban Pesach is not a korban yachid. It's always going to be a korban of at least two people. Therefore, it's not going to be able to be oisah tmura. So therefore, he didn't want to say that the Braisa is talking about a korban Pesach, because in fact, it's not a korban yachid. It's always a korban of shutfim, and therefore, it wouldn't be able to make a tmura. Okay, so the question is, v'notmei v'pesach sheni. Fine. Why doesn't Rav Sheshes then say at least that it's talking about Pesach Sheni? Where Pesach Sheni, you don't necessarily have that rule that it has to be brought only for at least two people. Because the idea is Pesach Sheni is whoever was Tomei Pesach Rishon is whoever was Tomei Pesach Rishon is bringing Pesach Sheni instead. And what if you only have one person who was Tomei? Then the Pashtus, he brings Pesach Sheni. So why don't we say that? The answer is because then that misses another one. Mi dochi tuma? Would Pesach Sheni be doicha tuma? Now, we're going to have a machloikas soon in the Gemara whether in fact it is. What if a person is tamei, or what if the kohenim are tamei, come Pesach Sheni? Would we say that he still brings the Pesach the tuma? Or would we say that, no, that's it, he's lost it for the year, because the whole point was, as the Gemara is going to say soon, that Pesach Sheni is meant for the person who was Tomei first Pesach. We want it to be Tahor for second Pesach. So Rav Sheshes would hold, according to the opinion, or at least even if Rav Sheshes doesn't hold according to this opinion, at least he wants to shell in the Braisa according to all possible opinions, and the Pesach Sheni wouldn't fit because it's not Doicha as a Tuma. Therefore, the only one that will touch all the bases is Eloi Shel Aaron. here's where actually Tosfos Yeshanim points out that it makes a difference what the girsa is in the Braisa before, whether we say Noig Betzibur Kaviyachid or Biyachid Kavitzibur, because if we have the girsa, which they had, Noig Betzibur Kaviyachid, in other words, it's a korban that primarily is for a yachid, but also can be for a tzibur, then what do you mean? Then in that case, with the korban Pesach, it would be the other way around. It's primarily Pesach Rishon is for the tzibur, and if you miss Pesach Rishon, then you have the yachidim bring it on Pesach Sheni. So he mentions an opinion of Rav Nosson that we learned from Pesachim that in principle all Jews could be Yotze with one Korban Pesach. Therefore, you can say Betzibur could be Yochid, that it is possible for the Korban Pesach to be a Korban, to be exclusively a Korban of a Yochid. And then it goes on with a little bit of discussion on various points related to that. Anyway, so that's it. So therefore, Rav Sheshes is not able to make the Braisa be speaking about the Korban Pesach, because Pesach Rishon, according to him, can't be for a Yochid. Pesach Sheni, according to some opinions that we're going to have soon, maybe Rav Sheshes holds this way, maybe not, can't be Doicha Tuma. So therefore, the only one that fits all the criteria, it's a Korban Yochid, but it's also for the Tzibur, because after all, it has to be brought as one of the Korbanos of Yom Kippur. It's a necessity for him to be able to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's Doicha Shabbos and Tuma, and it's able to make a Tzimura, is the Eloi Shel Aaron. Not necessarily would the power of Yom Kippur, which is a chatas, also meet those criteria because maybe it is considered a korban of shukri. Okay. Now, going further back, on Nun Amud Aleph, we had a discussion between the Tanakh Kama and Rab Meir and Rab Yaakov on the question, what's the criteria for what korbanos are doicha Shabbos and Tumah and what are not? First, we said the Tanakhama apparently seems to be saying that every korban yochid is not doicha them and every korban tzibur is. But Rav Meir then points out that you have certain korbanos yochid that are doicha Shabbos and Tumah, such as the korban Pesach. And then we had Rav Yaakov pointing out, on the flip side, you have some korbanos tzibur that are not doicha Shabbos and Tumah, one of them being the Chagiga. Now, ultimately, the korban Pesach and the korban Chagiga are both being brought by individuals. So the question is, Amalei Rav Huna Breidei Rav Shul Lerova, V'tana, Maishna Pesach to Korolei Korban Yochid, or Maishna Chagiga to Korolei Korban Sibur? Why is it that we're calling the Korban, why is it the Korban Pesach we're calling a Korban Yochid, and the Chagiga we're calling a Korban Sibur? Both of them are being brought by individuals, but both of them you have large numbers of Jews are bringing it at a time. The Korban Pesach, they all have to bring it on Erev Pesach afternoon. The Chagigah, fine, you have 8 days in which to bring it, but 7 or 8 days in which to bring it, but fine, each time it's being brought, many people, the pastors, are bringing it at the same time. So are you going to say, Imishum de Osi de Knufya, are you going to say that the Korban Chagigah is called a Korban Sibur because it comes in a large multitude, many people come and bring it at the same time? Well, Pesach Nami Osi de Knufya. Then you can say the same thing about the Korban Pesach. The answer is not necessarily, because it's a Pesach Sheni, the loyal Osi de Knufya. No, you have Pesach Sheni. That doesn't come in a huge multitude, because Pesach Sheni is only for the Yechidim. In fact, as we learned in Masechta Pesachim, if most of the Tzibur is Tomei Pesach Rishon, then they bring Pesach Rishon then. By definition, you're not going to have the Reuv of the Tzibur bringing Pesach Sheni. So therefore, we can call Pesach Sheni to be more of a Korban Yochid. Amalei, so Rav Huna Ber de Yeshua says, Imkein, if so, so if you're going to tell me that now when we say Pesach in that Brisa, in that discussion between the Tanakhama and Rav Meir and Rav Yaakov, we're going to say that when we refer to the Korban Pesach, we're referring to Pesach Sheni. In that case, Yehei Doicha Es Shabbos Ves Atoma. Then it should be Doicha Shabbos and it should be Doicha Toma. Because if we said that the Pesach is Doicha Shabbos and Toma, and if now you're telling me Pesach in that Braisa refers to Pesach Sheni, then it should be Doicha Shabbos and it should be Doicha Toma. And now Shabbos, fine. So fine. Shabbos it's Doicha. But where do we find that it's Doicha Toma? Omalei, so Rava says, ain't. As a matter of fact, yes, Kimanda Omadochi. That Braisa might be according to the opinion that Pesach Sheni is Doicha Toma. The Tanya, as in fact, we have a Braisa about that. It's interesting that we didn't have this discussion anywhere in Pesachim itself. The Gemara left it over here for Yoma. Anyway. Pesach Sheni Doicha Es Shabbos Ve'ena Doicha Es Toma. The Tanakama of the Braisa says that Pesach Sheni is Doicha Shabbos. So if Yud Dalad Nissan comes out on Shabbos, which nowadays the Kvius is such that it can never happen, but in those times when they were Makadosh Al Pi Ariyah, you could have Yud Dalad Iyah be on Shabbos. So then the Korban Pesach is brought on Shabbos because it says B'moya Dayan it. Ve'ena Doicha Es Toma, but it's not Doicha Toma. So in other words, if the person is Tomei, also Pesach Sheni, or the most of the, or the Koyanim are Tomei, etc., then you don't bring it. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm after Deich as a Toma. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it's also Deich a Toma. Which means, by the way, now, before we had it was Rabbi Meir, who was the one who mentioned that the Korban Pesach is, that the Korban Pesach is Deich a Shabbos and Toma. Now, that doesn't mean that Rabbi Meir necessarily agrees with Rabbi Yehuda over here. The Siach Yitzchak on our Gemara points out that Rabbi Meir might have been saying, according to your Svara, Rabbi Yehuda, in other words, I myself would maybe hold that it's not Doicha Toma, like the Chachamim over here. But you, Rabbi Yehuda, who hold that it's Doicha Toma, then how could you say a blanket statement that no Korban Yochid is Doicha Shabbos and Toma? Okay, anyway, so we see that there is a Machloikas about that point. The question is, my time at the Tanakhama. So what makes the Tanakhama say that the Pesach Sheni should not be Doicha Toma? After all, the Pesach Sheni is supposed to be in many ways like Pesach Rishon, and it does say on it the Moyadoi. So why shouldn't it be Doicha Toma? The answer is Amalach. He's going to say, though that's logical. The whole point was you pushed it off to Pesach Sheni because of Toma. The also the Toma. Now you're going to go make it the Toma. That would defeat the whole purpose. Therefore, logically, when the Torah gives you Pesach Sheni, it has to be accomplished by Tara. There, Rabbi Yehuda Amalach, Rabbi Yehuda would answer back. He would say, no. After all, the Pasuk says that Pesach Sheni should be done according to all the rules of Pesach Rishon, meaning that means includes the rule that the Pesach is brought by Toma. Meaning, he says, the Torah gives you an extra chance to bring it b'tara. You were tomei Pesach Rishon, and you weren't roiv of the kohol, therefore you couldn't bring it then. So the Torah gives you nishtokin b'falin, that now you can bring it Pesach Sheni, but loy zocha, but if you weren't zocha to bring it b'tuma, then Rabbi Yehuda says, yasena b'tuma. Go ahead and bring it b'tuma. At least, Abiyu should have a chance to bring it. Now, Tosfos talks about over here. Now, the fact is, if Rabbi Yehuda is learning from Kachol Chukas HaPesach Yasu Oysoi, then how is the Tanakhama disagreeing with that, based on his Svara? So Tosfos has a long discussion about it, as you can see, but they start by pointing out that both the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda are agreeing that we're learning from Pesach Rishon to Pesach Sheni. But the Tanakhama takes the view as follows. Pesach Rishon, when do we say it's Doicha Truma? Only if you have a majority of the Tzibur. Okay, well then, if it were to, in other words, the rule is, if you bring a Pesach, if Roiv of the Tzibur is bringing a Pesach, then they can bring it for Truma. But since Pesach Sheni is not ever brought by Roiv of the Tzibur, by definition, because if Roiv of the Tzibur was Tomei Mes, then they bring Pesach Rishon, and as we learned in Pesachim, if most of them were Tomei with other kinds of Tumas, then no Korban Pesach is brought that year at all. Then no Pesach Sheni, sorry, Pesach Rishon is still brought by the Mir to our Torah, but there's no Pesach Sheni that year at all. So therefore, the Chachamim say, yeah, we are learning from Kachol Chukas HaPesach that there's a similarity. The similarity is both of them, if Roiv is bringing it, then it's Doicha Truma. But when it comes to Pesach Sheni, it never happens that Roiv are bringing it, therefore you never have an opportunity to do that. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda takes the view that no, what it means is just like Pesach Rishon is never completely bottled. Whoever is available to do Pesach Rishon does Pesach Rishon, even if they're a miyot. The same way, Pesach Sheni should never be bottled, and therefore, even if the people are Tomei, then you should still be bringing it. And then Tosfos gets into a long discussion about what we're learning from Kachol Chukas HaPesach, what we're learning from the word B'moyadoi. What we're saying is and isn't doicha, and Tosfos gets into a long discussion about the limudim from these various psukim. Okay.
We're changing the definition of a korban yachid. We said previously the korban yachid is one person, two people is a korban tzibur,
sure.
Right? And here we're saying that even. Even we don't have a majority of the Jewish people, when there's no majority, then it's a korban yachid. So what is it? Is it two people or is it less than the majority?
So what we're saying is like this. You have three possibilities. There's korban yachid, korban tzibur, and korban shukvin. What we're saying is like this. According to Rav Sheshes, who is following Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, Pesach Rishon is never a korban yachid because you can never bring it on behalf of a yachid. You always have to have at least two people. So Pesach Rishon, according to that opinion, is always a korban of shukvin. We're not calling it a korban tzibur. We could call it a korban tzibur as well. Not so much because all the Jewish people are joining in one, but just because all the Jewish people are bringing it at the same time. As the Gemara said, it's brought b'knufya in a large gathering of Jews. Pesach Sheni, meanwhile, Pesach Sheni, we would say it could be brought for a yachid. Because if you have only one person who's Tomei, then the Korban Pesach who was Tomei Pesach Rishon and now is bringing it for Pesach Sheni, it could be brought just for him alone. It's not brought the Knufia because you don't have a large gathering of Jews who are coming and bringing Pesach Sheni. Therefore, Pesach Sheni is more considered a Korban of Yochid. On the other hand, we have a machlokes whether it's doicha tumah or not. Do we say even though it's a korban yachid, it's doicha tumah because it's like Pesach Rishon, or do we say that not? Because the whole point was that it was supposed to be brought for tumah. So the korban Pesach, so Pesach Rishon, according to Rav Sheshes, is not a korban yachid. Now according to the Chachamim who disagree with Rav Yehuda. According to the Chachamim, who disagree with Rabbi Yehuda and say that the Korban Pesach could be brought for Yochid, then according to that, you could have the Pesach Rishon could be called a Korban Yochid, and that's what we were saying before, that Rabbi Meir had said that, look, you have the Korban Pesach is a Korban Yochid, and it is Doicha Shabbos, and it is Doicha Truma.
But I'm asking the question for the Chachamim. On behalf of the Chachamim, Chachamim say that the Pesach Rishon is a Korban Tzibur because the whole Jewish people is associated with that. Whereas the Pesach Sheni, as you said, it's impossible. So according to Chachamim, what is the definition of a Yachid and a Tzibur? A Tzibur, is it the minority of the Jewish people, or is it more than two people or more? No. It seems to be changing according to our Chachamim.
If you have two people or more, then it's a korban of shutvim. But that's only relevant as far as the dinim of tmura. A korban of shutvim, you can't have a tmura. A korban of yochid, you can. Within the dinim of whether it's doicha Shabbos or truma, we need to know whether it's a korban yochid or korban sibur. So the answer is, according to the Chachamim, that the Pesach Rishon could be shechted for a yochid. Nevertheless, in terms of tmura, it can be called a korban yochid because you can have one owner of it. In terms of being doicha Shabbos and truma, we're going to consider it sort of an honorary korban sibur because it's brought b'knufya, because it's brought with a large gathering, because all the Jewish people together come to offer it.
That's fine, but the problem is that korban shutfim doesn't push away tuma.
That's true, but that's what the Chachamim are saying.
And that's the problem.
The Chachamim would disagree with Rabbi Yehuda, would be saying that the korban, that Pesach Rishon, in terms of the dinim of tmura, can be called a korban of yachid. If you have a korban Pesach that's owned by only one person, then it could make a tmura. If, as is usually the case, you have more people registered for it, then it cannot. So far as being Doicha Shabbos and Tumah, though, we're going to call it a korban sibur because it's brought the knufya.
Even though there's less than the majority of the Jewish people.
Right, because it's meant to be brought by the whole Jewish people. So it may happen this particular time that you have most of the people are Tameh, and you only have a minority that are bringing Pesach Rishon. But nevertheless, since it's meant to be brought the knufya, then we can call it. So really, it may be more a matter of definition. We have the Tanakama on Nun Amar Aleph saying that that Korbanos Tzibur are Doicha Shabbos and Tumah, and Korbanos Yochid are not. And then Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yaakov pointed out their respective things. So the Tanakama might well say, I'm calling the Korban Pesach a Korban Tzibur, regardless, because it's meant to be brought with Tzibur. Whereas Rabbi Meir would be saying, the fact is, the Korban Pesach can be brought by a Yochid. Even Pesach Sheni, we're saying over here, according to the Yehuda, is Doicha Tumah, even though it can be brought only by a Yochid. And Pesach Rishon, even if because it could happen that it's brought only by a minority of the Jewish people, therefore we should call it a Korban Yochid, and therefore you can't say a blanket statement that no Korban Yochid is Doicha Shabbos and Tumah. So ultimately, in terms of the dinim of what Doicha Shabbos and Tumah and what not, there's not a lot of difference. The major difference we're saying over here is, as far as Pesach Sheni, is it Doicha Tumah? Everybody agrees that Pesach Rishon is Doicha Shabbos and is Doicha Tumah, whether you have a few people or whether you have the majority of the Jewish people bringing it. Everybody agrees that the various other Korbanos Tzibur are also Doicha Shabbos and Tumah. Everybody agrees that the Chagiga and the Par, Helam, Dovashal Tzibur, and other such things are not Doicha Shabbos and Tumah. Everybody agrees that the Par Kohen Gadol is. It's really mostly a matter of definition, but, so again, one Nafgemina would be, is Pesach Sheni Doicha Tumah? Another Nafgemina would be the ones that we're calling Korban Yochid, such as the Par of Kohen Gadol, and such as maybe the Korban Pesach, are those able to make a tmura? But as far as the substantive issue of which ones are Doicha Shabbos and Tumah, which ones are Doicha Shabbos, everybody agrees on, and which ones are Doicha Tumah, for the most part, except for Pesach Sheni, everybody also agrees.
But Pesach Sheni, they don't agree on Tumah.
On Tumah, right. So that's one difference, right.
Okay.
Going back now to Rabbi Lazar's question, the original way we got into this whole discussion was about the question of whether the Par Kohen Gadol is able to make a tmura. And again, we said the basic question is it considered a korban of yochid, which the kapara of the kohenim sort of floats above the Kohen Gadol's kapara, or are they really considered partners in it? So, but typically, we should have a different reason to say that for Rabbi Lazar to know that it's considered a korban of a yochid, and that the kohenim are not really considered co-owners of it, because the asher loy amar achmana, the pasuk says that the Kohen Gadol has to bring a par, has to bring the par asher loy, which is his, and that means mishaloy who maybe. That means he has to bring it out of his own money. And we actually have three times in the psukim, as we're going to go on to say, where it says that it has to be his. So therefore, in other words, the idea is, if we're insisting that it has to be his, then how could we possibly say that the Kohenim are considered partners in it? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Asher loy, the Pasuk says that this Korban, the par, has to be brought, it has to be of his. That means Mishaloi who may be the loy Mishal Tzibur, means he brings it out of his own money. He does not bring it from money of the Tzibur, unlike most of the other Korbanos on Yom Kippur, which are bought from Trumas Alishka. This has to be brought from the Kohen Gadol's personal money. And the Braisa continues, Yochol lo yavi mishal tzibur. Now you would think what that means is, okay, you can't bring it from the tzibur. She'ein ha-tzibur miskaperin bo. There's logic to that, because after all, the tzibur is not having kapara with this korban. It's for himself and the kohenim. So you can't say that the whole Jewish people should have to contribute to a korban for himself and the kohenim. Avo yavi mishal echav ha-kohenim. But maybe you could say that he collects the money from his fellow kohenim. After all, they all participate in the kapara of it. No, Talmud Lomar, Asher Loi. A second time, the pasuk says Asher Loi. Each time it mentions this par, it uses the word Asher Loi. The Hikri of Aaron is Parachatas Asher Loi. A few psukim later, the Hikri of Aaron is Parachatas Asher Loi, and the Shochet is Parachatas Asher Loi. So a second time, when it says Asher Loi, means that he's not collecting from the kohenim either. Now, Yochol lo yavi. Now, you would think maybe that means, okay, he shouldn't collect from the other kohenim. He should bring it on his own. The im hevi kosher. But if he did bring it on his own, b'di'evet, if he did bring it by collecting money from the other kohenim, b'di'evet, it should be kosher. Tamad loy mashuv. Therefore, it says yet again, a third time, asher loy, meaning shona akosav olav la'akiv. The Torah is repeating it again to tell us that it's ma'akiv. We have a general rule by kodshim. And some say that it applies to other mitzvahs as well, that when the Torah repeats a point twice, then it means it's ma'akev, it means it must be that way, and if not, then it's possible. So here you have. So within the idea of collecting from the Kohenim, it says twice, Asher Loi, teaching us that no, you can't be collecting from the Kohenim, the Kohen Gadol himself has to give the animal or buy the money, or give the money to buy the animal. So it's one thing. In other words, we could say if it was that the Kohenim could voluntarily contribute to them if they wanted, then fine, we can discuss whether if they did or they didn't, whether it belongs to them or not. But if we're saying the Pasuk is insisting that it shouldn't come from them, how can we possibly say that they're partners in it? So the answer is v'litai meich nu, and according to your own svara that you're asking on Rabbi Lazar from this braisa and saying how could Rabbi Lazar not realize that and not know therefore that it's considered the korban of the kohen gadol, and that the other kohenim's kapara in it is only mikufia, is only floating above his v'litai meich, according to your own logic you have to ask anyway, even if you say that echav kohenim e lav dekonu b'gavei heichem echapar lehu. So if they don't own a share in the animal, how could they have kapara in it? If I bring a korban on behalf of myself, we're not going to say that it's mechaper on you as well, mikufya. You have to be a co-owner of the animal. So anyway, we know that the kohenim are getting kapara with this animal. So obviously there must be some way that they're partners in it. So again, you could ask yourself anyway, even if you say that it's mikufya. The fact is, in order to have kapara, even mikufya, they're going to need to own a share in the animal. Ela shiny de gaza de Aaron. Rather, we can answer that it's different when it comes to the treasury, to the money of Aaron. The afkere rachmana gabe echav ha-koyanim. The Torah is taking this money of his and being maskeret to the other koyanim. In other words, what we're saying is that even though the power belongs to the Kohen Gadol, the Torah, in effect, is expropriating it from him and saying it now belongs to all the Kohen. Well, then, you could say, Hocha Gabit Muranami. Well, then, you can use the same, and that explains how they have kapara with it, because after all, now the Torah made it. He wasn't specifically makna a share in it to them, but the Torah is makna a share in it to them. Well, then, Hocha Gabit Muranami. Well then, to answer Rabbi Lazar's question, you could say as far as Tmura as well. You could say the same answer. Shiny bnei Gaza de Aaron. It might be different as far as the treasury, as far as the money of Aaron. The Afki Rachmana Gabe Echaba Karinim. That the Torah is makirit to his fellow Kohanim, and therefore, in other words, that, yes, it is now considered a korban of shrutim, and a korban of shrutim is not able to make a tmura. So, yeah. So now we could say, so Agos HaBach actually adds words to the Gemara, the yesh loimer de miskafer b'kviyosa, now you could very well say, on the basis of that, now you don't have to say that the Kohanim's ownership of it is only mikufya, it could actually be kviyosa, it could be they have a kviyosika ownership of it, and therefore that their kapara is on an equal level to the Kohen Gadol, is not just floating above his. So that's the maskana. So in fact, the Rambam paskins that way, that the Torah is maskerit to the other Kohanim. Now, Tosfos actually points out that the discussion we just had, but typically, we were saying so far, according to Rashi, that it's all referring back to Rabbi Lazar's question about what happened, about whether it can make a tmura. Another way of looking at it, you can also say, is that the Gemara is referring now all the way back to the question that we started on Daf Mem Tes, which was, what happens if the first Kohen Gadol dies? Can the second one bring the blood of the par in, or do we say that he has to shech the new par? So that would depend partially on the question of, we asked that if the first Kohen Gadol dies, wouldn't it be a chatas amesa? And the answer is no, because the other co-owners of it are alive, and therefore that Rambam duly passed them that way. Now that we're saying that the Torah is mafia, the Kohen Gadol's possession, his power, to all the other Kohanim, meaning they all share in it equally. So now the result is, it can't make a tmura, but the result is also that if the Kohen Gadol passes away, and the new Kohen Gadol has to take over, then yes, he was a co-owner of this animal. As far as the fact that he didn't shech the animal, that doesn't matter, because we said b'far means v'afilu b'dam. It means that even just the fact that he's bringing the blood into the Kodesh HaKadoshim is good enough. The fact that he was a co-owner of it before, along with all the other Kohanim, prevents it from being considered a chatas amesa, and therefore we're able to take this chatas and actually continue offering it whatever point, no matter what point in the avodah, the first Kohen Gadol die, without having to worry that it's a chatas amesa, because you have the other Kohanim who are partners in it, are still alive. And therefore that's what we end up with. Okay. Mishnah says, Hoya Mahalach Behechel. Now we're finally, the Kohen Gadol is finally going towards the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He walks through the Heichel with, and again, we said in the first Mishnah that he has the pan full of coals in his right hand and the spoonful of tortas in his left hand. So he's walking over there through the Heichel. Ad shemagia leben shtei haparoiches hamavdilis ben haKodesh ben Kodesh HaKadoshim. Until he reaches the two paroichesin that separated the Kodesh from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So there were two paroichesin for reasons that we're going to discuss in the Gemara. We're also going to see in the next Mishnah that what they did is they pinned up one, both Parochasin ran from north to south because they separate the Heichel, the Kodesh, and the Kodesh HaKadoshim are 20 amas wide. So they had a 20 amma wide curtain, so two curtains we're saying. One of them was pinned up at the south end to give an opening that the Kohen Gadol can go through. The other one is pinned up at the north end to do the same thing. And this way, so the Kohen Gadol would walk towards the Parochasin, and then he's going to walk between the two Parochasin. There's an Amma, so therefore he would walk in that one Amma space. So he's going in through the pinned up side of one of the Parochasin, the outer one. Then he's walking parallel to the Kodesh HaKadoshim along the full width of it, between the two curtains, and then he comes out at the other end where the other curtain is pinned up, and now he's in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Rabbi Yossi says, what two curtains? Loi hoisa shamela parechas achas belvad. There was only one curtain there. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, v'yidila parechas b'chem bein haKodesh or bein Kodesh HaKadoshim. The pasuk says by the Mishkan that there's one parechas that separates the Kodesh from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So therefore, in the Beis Mikdash, there was also only one parechas. So the Gemara says, Shafir Kamal Lahu Rabbi Yossi L'Rabbanan. No, Rabbi Yossi has a very good point. Why should we assume that it was any different in the Beis Mikdash as far as the number of Purei Chassin than it was in the Mishkan? The answer is, Rabbanan Amri Lach, because the Rabbanan will answer you, Hani Mili B'Mishkan. Yes, that's true. In the Mishkan, there was only one Purei Chas, Aval B'Mikdash Sheni, but the second Beis Mikdash, which is what we're dealing with here in the Mishnah, is different. Given, you know, we have to remember, in the Mishkan, of course, they didn't have, there was no wall between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. There was the curtain, the one Parechas. Now, in the first Beis Mikdash, there was a wall between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. There was a wall, and then in the middle of that wall, there was a doorway, and the doorway was covered with a smaller Parechas. But the main separation between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim was a wall that was an Amah thick. And it was called Amah Traxim. It was called Amah Traxin, Amah because it's an Amah thick. Traxin, Rashi brings further along in the Gemara from the Yerushalmi that the word Traxin means inside and outside. So in other words, it became a suffix whether it really belongs to the inside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim or whether it belongs to the outside, to the Heichal. Tosfos here gives a different explanation that Trax comes from a word that means to close the doors. Troik Ugali means close the doors. Sin refers to the luchos that were given at Har Sinai. So therefore, Trak Sin means the wall that encloses the luchos that were given at Sinai. And therefore, it's called Trak Sin. So in the first place in Mikdash, they had that. They had a wall and Amah thick. So now, the Mikdash Sheni, going back to the Gemara now, the Mikdash Sheni, given to Lo Havori Amah Trak Sin, in the second place in Mikdash, there was no Amah Trak Sin. Over Mikdash Rishon Hu Davori, it was only in the first place in Mikdash. The So now the Chachamim, when they came to build the second Beis Mikdash, they had a suffix whether the space that wall took up belongs to the inside, to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, or does it belong to the outside, to the Heikel. But Avud Shtei Parechas, so therefore they made two Parechas in with an Amah space between them, where that space is that area that we're not sure whether it belongs to the Kodesh or the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now, why didn't they build a wall in the second Beis Mikdash the same as they did in the first? The Gemara explains for us in Bava Basra, so for those of us who can make it for the Ein Yaakov Shiur today, this afternoon, we'll be discussing this there, Be'ez Hashem, that the ground floor of the second Beis Mikdash was taller than that of the first. The first Beis Mikdash, the ground floor was 30 amas tall. So the Gemara explains over there that the wall was an amah thick. Usually, of course, an amah thick wall wouldn't be able to stand if it's that high. It would buckle and it would collapse. But here, where the whole ground floor is 30 amas tall, and the top of the wall is therefore supported by the ceiling, then it's stable and it would stand. The second Beis Mikdash, on the other hand, the ground floor was 40 amas tall. So therefore, a wall 1 amah thick and 40 amas tall, even if it's supported by the roof, wouldn't be stable and it would eventually buckle and it would fall down. So the Gemara discusses over there that the Gemara discusses over there in Bava Basra that they couldn't just make that the wall will go to whatever height it will work stably and then the rest will be a pareichas. It has to be one or the other. It's either all pareichas or all wall. So therefore they had no choice but to not have a wall at all and rather have the pareichas. So now Tosfos asks over here, okay, so why do we need to have why don't we have one Parechas that's an Amah thick? And in fact, Rabbi Yossi may well hold that's exactly what we did. But according to the Chachamim, why do we have two Parechas in with a space in between instead of just making one Parechas, which is an Amah thick? So Tosfos discusses because the Chachamim understand that when we say the Parechas divide between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim means the outer edge of the Parechas should be the borderline between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So now, if you have a Parechas, that's an Amah thick, and the whole point is, that Amah space, we're not sure whether it belongs to the Kodesh or whether it belongs to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then you're going to have the same problem. If you have a Parechas and Amah thick, where do you put it? Do you put it in such a way that you have 19 Amas of empty space, and then the 20th Amah is the thickness of the Parechas, and the outer edge of it marks the outer edge of the Kodesh HaKadoshim? Or do you put it that there's 20 Amas space of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and then the Parechas, and the 1 Amah thickness of it also counts as part of the Kodesh HaKadoshim? Or not, does that Amah belong to the Kodesh? So therefore, they have to make two Parechas in where So therefore, they have to make two parochas, and where that way, the outer edge, that way, whichever one is supposed to be, the border of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the outer edge of it will be where it's supposed to be. Whereas Rabbi Yossi, Tosfos says, either doesn't have a problem with that. He says that the Vivdila Parochas Lachem just means there's the space of the Kodesh, there's the space of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and as long as the curtain is dividing between them, then we don't care where the outer edge of them, where its outer edge is, as long as it makes a separation. So according to him, you just need one curtain. Or he could say that he knows for a fact that he doesn't have the suffix. He knows for a fact that the Amma Traxin does have the Kedusha of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So therefore, good. You put the curtain in such a way. You have 19 Ammas of space from the back wall of the Kodesh HaKadoshim till the beginning of the Parochas. The Parochas itself is an Amma thick. That takes up the 20th Amma. And good. The outer edge of it is the outer edge of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So that would be Rabbi Yossi's opinion. And by the way, in the third Beis Hamikdash, Shibonim V'Heir Yamenu, the Navi Yechezkel tells us that the wall between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim is going to be 2 Ammas thick. So that way, we don't have all these problems. We'll be able to have a wall again, like in the first Beis Hamikdash. It'll be 2 Amas thick rather than 1. So therefore, it can be a higher height. The ground floor of the second Beis Hamikdash can be 40 Amas tall, or it could be, I don't remember if it says in the Pesukim over there how tall it is. In any case, it can be 40 Amas tall. It could be maybe even taller. And because it's 2 Amas wide, it'll be stable. Okay. So but according to the Chachamim, you have the suffix, and that's why you need a 2 parochas. Okay. So now let's talk about the Kohen Gadol was saying is walking through the Heichal. Now we know, of course, in the Heichal, you have the 3 items over there. You have the Shulchan, the Menorah, and the Mizbeach. What's the Kohen Gadol's route through the Heichal to reach the Kodesh HaKadoshim? So Tana Rabbanan, Bein HaMizbeach LaMenorah, Hoya Mahalech Yibei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that he would walk between the Mizbeach and the Menorah. So you have the Shulchan is on the north side of the Heichal, a couple of 2.5 Amos away from the wall. The Menorah is on the south side of the Heichal, also 2.5 Amos away from the wall. The Mizbeach HaZahav is in the middle, but further out, closer towards the entrance. The Shulchan and the Menorah are in the, if you take the Heichal, and divide it in 2. The length of the Heichal is 40 Amos. So the Shulchan and the Menorah are within the last 20 Amos. The Mizbeach HaZahav is on the edge, is on the 20 Amos line. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying that the Kohen Gadol, he walks through the first 20 Amos, which is empty. Then he reaches the Mizbeach HaZahav. He goes around it, or he goes next to it, or whatever. He goes on the south side of it, between the Mizbeach and the Menorah. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rab Meir Omer ben Shulchan l'Mizbeach. Rab Meir says he actually goes between the Shulchan and the Mizbeach. So the other way, he goes on the north side of the Mizbeach HaZahav and passes between it and the Shulchan. The Yesh Omer ben Shulchan l'Kosel, and Yesh Omerim that he goes between the Shulchan and the wall in that 2.5 Amma space between the Shulchan and the wall. So first of all, man Yesh Omerim. So first of all, who is this Yesh Omerim? Now usually Yesh Omerim means Rav Nosson, but sometimes it can be a different Tana. Amar Rav Chista, Rav Yossi. So Rav Chista says that would be Rav Yossi. Amar Pischa B'tzof and Koi. Now, we said in the Mishnah that according to Rav Yossi, there's only 1 Parochas. And that one, now again, if there are 2 Parochas, like the Chachamim say, then we said the outer one was pinned up on the south side. The inner one, everybody agrees that the actual entrance into the Kodesh HaKadoshim was on the north side. Because the north side is more important. We see that Kodesh HaKadoshim are shechted there, for example. So now, according to Rabbi Yossi, that there's only 1 Parochas, then the opening, the place where it was pinned up to allow the Kohen Gadol to go in, was on the north side. Therefore, it makes sense. So he's walking along the north side of the Heichal, and he's going directly into that side. According to the Chachamim, that there are 2 Parochas in, then the outer one was pinned up on the south side, the inner one was pinned up on the north side. So again, the Kohen Gadol is doing a zigzag. He's going to the south, then he's walking along the length, along the Amma between the 2 Parochasin, and coming in through the north, through the curtain that's open on the north, and walking into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So now, according to Rabbi Yossi, the Amma Pischa B'tzof and Koi, he says the entrance to the Kodesh HaKadoshim was on the north. And again, according to him, there's only 1 Parochas. So therefore, you walk along the whole north side of the Heichal, and eventually you reach that opening.
Where Rabbi Yehuda Amalach, whereas Rabbi Yehuda, who wants him to be walking between the Mizbeach and the Menorah on the south side, Amalach, he's going to tell you, Pischa B'dorim Kari. No, the opening, the first opening that he goes to from the Heichal is on the south side. So if he were to walk, near the Shulchan, or between the Shulchan and the wall, then he would have to then cross, or he would have to go across the entire Heichal. There's no reason to make him do that. So therefore, to begin with, he walks in the southern side of the Heichal. Now, we're going to explain soon in the Gemara why, according to the Yehuda, we don't say, according to the Yossi, we said he walks between the Shulchan and the wall. Why don't we say the same thing, that he can walk between the menorah and the wall? We'll get to that soon. But in any case, Rabbi Yehuda is saying he can't walk. There's no reason to make him walk on the north side, because anyway he has to go toward the south to enter the opening over there. Therefore, he might as well go on the south side to begin with. Okay. Now the question becomes: Rabbi Meir commands Svidalei. New, which of these shittas does Rabbi Meir hold like? If he holds like Rabbi Yehuda that the opening is on the south side, then he should go in like Rabbi Yehuda says. He should go between the Mizbeach HaZahav and the Menorah. Why is Rabbi Meir putting him between the Shulchan and the Mizbeach? And if he holds like Rabbi Yossi that there's only one Pareches and the opening is on the north side, then let him walk between the Shulchan and the wall like Rabbi Yossi says. Why does he have him go between the Shulchan and the Mizbeach HaZahav? The answer is La'olam k'Rav Yosi Svirlei. You can answer that he does hold like Rav Yosi. There is only one Pareches, and the opening in it is on the north side, which means ultimately he does have to reach the north. But the Amalach, but Rav Meir will tell you the reason why you can't have him walk along the north wall the way Rav Yosi does is Shulchanis Safin V'Dorim Munachim. You have like this. Besides for the original Shulchan that was made for the Mishkan, and then afterwards the same one was used in the Bais Mikdash, or maybe they have to make a new one, as the case may be. Besides that, the Psukim in Malachim and in Divrei Hayamim tell us that Shlomo also had 10 more Shulchanis made. Now, some of the Mephoshim learn that those Shulchanis were not present in the second Bais Mikdash, but here, since we're talking about the second Bais Mikdash, and the Gemara is assuming that they were there, then Bepashtus, we have to assume that we're saying they were there as well. So you had 10 Shulchanis that Shlomo made. Now, the problem is like this. The Gemara discusses in Menachos, we learned this in Shkalim as well, how were those Shulchanis arranged? The problem, each Shulchan was the size of the original Shulchan of Moshe, so 2 Amos by 1 Amma. The problem is, if you place them end to end, 10 Shulchanos are going to take up a length of 20 Amos. Now, first of all, you have like this. There's a machloikas b'chlal as far as the kalim of the kalim that were in the Kodesh, the Shulchan and the Menorah. Were they placed with their long dimensions going from the east to the west, or were they placed with their long dimension going from the north to the south? So now, if we say that they went from north to south, meaning that it was across the width of the Heichal, so now if you place the other 10 tables the same way in one line, you would have a problem. They take up a full width, they take up a width of full 20 amas if you place them end to end. Not only, first of all, they're going to be blocking the whole Heichal, because the whole Heichal is only 20 amas wide. But second of all Shulchanis have to be in the north half of the Heichal. Therefore, Rabbi Meir is going to learn, how did they arrange the Shulchanis? They had them in two rows. The Gemara in Menachos discusses, so then according to that opinion, they had Moshe's Shulchan in the middle, and they had one row east of it and one row west of it. All of those rows run from north to south. They start at the wall, and you have 5 Shulchanis in each row. 5 Shulchanis, each 2 Amos long, takes up 10 Amos, so they go exactly until the midpoint of the Heichal. So the Shulchanis are on the north side, like they should be. They don't block the full width of the Heichal. They block the northern 10 Amos of the Heichal. But the southern 10 Amos, the southern half, is still open. In other words, the Shulchanis came out looking like an H shape. You have one row, another row, and in between them you have Moshe's Shulchan. So now, Rabbi Meir takes the view and that these 10 shulchanos, the two rows of them, five each, were placed from north to south, therefore, mafsik alei the shulchan, so therefore the result is that the shulchanos are blocking him. If he wanted to walk along the north wall the whole time, like Rav Yossi is saying, he can't, because the shulchanos, the first row of shulchanos is right, the end of the first shulchan is by the wall, so he can't walk over there. So therefore, Rav Meir is going to say, necessarily, therefore, he does. Now, we do want him walking on the north. We do want him walking on the north side, says Rav Meir, because ultimately he's going to have to go to the north side where he enters the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But he can't walk along the north wall. Therefore, we have him walk as close as possible to there. We have him walk between the Mizbeach HaZahav and the row of Shulchanos. He wouldn't be able to go directly along the wall because the Shulchanos are blocking him. By the way, Marsha learns over here, actually, that we may say, according to that, that the Mizbeach HaZahav was not necessarily exactly in the middle, exactly halfway on the midpoint, half in the north and half in the south. Rather, we could say that it was actually a little bit over to the south, such that the edge of it, such that the wall of it, was on the midline of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. In other words, Mizbeach HaZahav was an amma by an amma. So therefore, see, the width of the Kodesh HaKadoshim is 20 amas. So we usually understand that it means, in other words, you have 9.5 amas of space, then an amma of Mizbeach, and then another 9.5 amas of space. Marsha says, based on the Gemara over here, it may be that not necessarily. Maybe what you had is 9 amas of space from the south wall until the beginning of the Mizbeach HaZahav, an amma for the Mizbeach, and then 10 amas of space between that and the north wall. So according to Rav Meir, the Kohen Gadol is walking in that space between the Mizbeach HaZahav and the Shulchanos, because the Shulchanos stick out until the 10 amma line. The Mizbeach also sticks out until the 10 amma line, according to him, but it's further out than the Shulchanos, so therefore we have a space in between that he can walk in. So anyway, so that's one reason why Rav Meir would have him walking between the Mizbeach HaZahav and the Shulchan. The Iboisem, or another possibility, La'olam Mizrach HaMayr of Monachin. We could say that maybe Rav Meir holds that the Shulchanos were arranged from east to west. In other words, that the long axis of each of the tables and the long axis of each of those of each of the sides of the letter H was from east to west. So therefore, so now you don't have that whole problem that we said that the north half of the Heichal is being blocked. You have enough room over there to place a row of Shulchanos, which is an amma wide, and then next day at Moshe's Shulchan, and then another row of Shulchanos, an amma wide. So you're still going to have the H shape, or the Gemara in Menachos brings up a possibility that maybe you had a U shape, maybe according to that, Moshe's Shulchan would be like at the head of the table, in front of the two rows, closest to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so that it looked like a Ches shape. Whatever the case, the point is, according to that way of looking at it, there would be plenty of room to walk along the north wall. But given that the Shechina is in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it's not derech eretz to be walking along such that you're seeing it the whole time. You, according to that, Rav Meir would figure, you're walking along the north wall, you're going to be seeing into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, because again, we're talking according to Rav Yossi, that there's only one parochas. So what? As he's walking along the 40 amma length of the Heichal, the whole time he's going to be able to stare into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's not right. It's not derech eretz. Therefore, Rav Meir wants him to be walking most of the time. He should be walking elsewhere in the Heichal, as we said, between the Mizbeach HaZahav and the Shulchan, and only when he reaches the Parochas, only then does he actually go over to the entrance of the Parochas and go in. That way he's not walking along the whole time and enjoying the view of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Rav Yossi Amalach, whereas Rav Yossi is going to answer you, you don't need that. Chaviv in Yisrael, Shalei Tzurchan, Akas of L'Shliach. Adadabah, we see how precious the Jewish people are, that we see that they don't require a Shliach. And therefore, now when they have a Shliach, the Kohen Gadol, then he can enter straight in, and yes, he can be looking at the Kodesh HaKadoshim the whole time. So what does it mean they don't need a Shliach? Rashi explains that we see that every person can daven for themselves. As we have, when Shlomo is dedicating the Bais HaMikdash, he stresses the idea that every person who has a problem should be able to come to the Bais HaMikdash and daven. So therefore, so now the shliach of the Jewish people to accomplish the kapara of Yom Kippur is also very important in Hashem's eyes, and therefore we can allow him to walk through straight, to walk straight down, says Rabbi Yossi, even though it means that he's gazing, even though it may mean that he's going to gaze into the Kodesh HaKadoshim the whole time. Tosfos Yishonim doesn't like that explanation of that's what it means, Shaloi Tzrichin HaKos of the Shliach, because, so what? The Pesukim also say over there that if a guy comes to the Bais HaMikdash, then Hashem should listen to his tefillos. So therefore, they and most other Rishonim prefer the explanation of Rabbeinu Hanan. The Shliach that we're talking about over here is, we know that throughout the year, the Kohen Gadol wore the Me'il, and the Me'il had bells on the bottom of it, where the idea was to announce his presence. Al derech, like you shouldn't just barge into somebody's house before you first knock. The same way, the Kohen Gadol would be walking with the bells on his Me'il, and they would announce his presence before he comes in. But on Yom Kippur, he's not wearing the Me'il. He goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim without the Me'il, because he's wearing only the four clothes, and the Me'il is not one of them. So therefore, we're saying, on Yom Kippur itself, we're not requiring him to be like that, to require the bells to announce his presence. He's like a ben bias on that day. He's like, he's just entitled to walk in without unannounced. So therefore, according to WAC, there's no problem with him walking down, walking along the north wall, and being able to see into the Kodesh HaKadoshim the whole time as well. Now, Rashi, who didn't want that explanation, Rashi gives the explanation that we're talking about tefillah. We learned before on Daf Mem Dalad that the pan of coals that the Kohen Gadol took into the Kodesh HaKadoshim had a niyashtik, and we said, Rashi said over there, a niyashtik was a ring that would clang as he's walking along. So according to Rashi, you can't say that he doesn't need a shliach as in something to announce himself. He has that niyashtik that's making the noise instead of the bell of the meal. Whereas everybody else who says, we had a few different explanations over there of what a niyashtik is. It's a sleeve, or it's a cover, or it's a base, etc. So according to them, there's taka nothing to announce his presence, and that's what the Gemara would mean, that there's nothing, that he doesn't need anything to announce his presence. Okay. So one last thing we have to ask, Rabbi Yehuda Nami, now according to Rabbi Yehuda, fine, going back to Rabbi Yehuda, we're saying he holds that the first opening to the Kodesh HaKadosh, remember, he says that there were two parechuses. So according to him, the opening to the first one was on the south. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is having him walk along the south side. But why is Rabbi Yehuda, why is Rabbi Yehuda making him walk between the Mizbeach HaZahav and the Menorah, especially according to Marsha, that the Mizbeach HaZahav is moved over a little bit towards the south. So like he has to go like in a loop. He has to go like in a half loop. Why doesn't he instead just walk between the menorah and the wall, and then he can walk straight along? Here there's no problem of Lameya Lahedya, that he's going straight in and steering into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have two parochuses, so on that side, the view into the Kodesh HaKadoshim is blocked by the inner parochus. Only when he walks through the Amma space in between, only then is he going to reach the entrance to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, why doesn't he walk along the south wall? The reason is mishakering money. If he did that, his clothes would be blackened by the smoke of the menorah, which blackens the wall over there, and therefore, and in fact, for that reason, the menorah was a couple of amos away from the wall. It was 2.5 amos away from the wall, but still, inevitably, you had some soot and whatever that stuck to the wall, and the kohen gadol's begadim have to be clean. In general, the kohen's begadim have to be clean, and if they become dirty, then they're still kosher of the dieved, but you don't want them to be. So therefore, he doesn't want to walk in that space because his clothes might get dirty from the smoke and the soot. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda wants him to be walking between the Mizbeach HaZahav and the Menorah, where there's less of a chance of him getting dirty. Okay, so that's the bottom line. We have three different opinions how he walked. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he walks as close as possible to the south, but not actually along the south wall, because we don't want his clothes to get dirty from the soot of the Menorah. According to Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, he's walking along the north, because they hold that the entrance to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, there's only one. According to them, he has to go toward the north to enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But according to Rabbi Yossi, he walks between the Shulchan and the wall. And according to Rabbi Meir, he walks between the Shulchan and the Mizbeach, either because he's physically blocked by the Shulchanos, or because Rabbi Meir doesn't consider it derech eretz that he should be walking along and gazing into the Kodesh HaKadoshim the whole time. Okay.